KO4CEF mobile.
KO4CEF, KO4PXV.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. I have not hit any major traffic on 85 going in toward Greenville yet, so, but there's always hope that I will. But I'm truly hoping on the other side that I don't.
No, there's no telling. That's the bad part.
Yep, that is true. And with the time change, it just always happens where the way the sun's now setting, when you go around one of the turns right there on 85, the light is actually right in everybody's eyes. So, and it's no wonder you get a major brake check because people can't see anything in front of them. So it just comes to a major slowdown until people crest over the hill and can see again.
That's one reason I'm glad I go northbound whenever I get on the interstate, because it is horrible in the evenings. Once the sun sets low, oh God, 85 is a mess. I hated doing it when I worked B shift. Every once in a while, I'd come in early enough to get that sun at the wrong spot, and it was horrible.
In fact, I'll leave at 4:30, so I'm lucky enough to catch it where it's not so much right in my eyes, but I have had to leave around 5 or a few minutes after, and that's when it does really get bad.
The only thing that ever really keep me from wanting to move to Greenville, like North Greenville is pretty when you get up that way, but man, if I couldn't figure out another way to get home, you know, have to take 101 or something like that, I would just not do it.
That's when you just get one of those little jet packs to be able to fly to work. Those would be nice.
Yeah, that'd definitely be a nice way to get to work, unless it's a little cool. But, you know, during your normal days where it's not that bad, that'd be an awesome way to work.
Could you imagine the shock of somebody's face, somebody flying by him in a little plane, and see the jetpack person flying by him?
These people off guard. I can't remember. I saw something. It wasn't a car manufacturer, but somebody built it looked like a car-ish body style, and then it had the four props, almost like a drone, on it. I saw that here recently. I just can't remember enough detail about it off the top of my head.
I remember seeing that, too. Yeah, those are definitely cool, pretty cool. Like I said, I guess the biggest holdback on all that right now is having enough fuel and getting enough thrust ratio to get it off the ground high enough to where you could, you know, go a long distance with them.
Who I was riding with, you like, you know, if you had two friends and the third one would put you over the weight limit, what do you do then? You just pick between the two of them and you're like, sorry, you can't ride with us.
That is definitely true. And if it's anything, from what I've heard, like an experimental aircraft, you have to have a parachute on it for the safety's sakes, because you would not get me to fly even single without one. That way, it would definitely have the better chance of coming down to the ground safely.
I had a buddy of mine years and years back, it's probably been maybe 20 years, 15, 20 years, and he was taking ultralight flying lessons, and those things look cool, don't get me wrong, but I think I'd be scared to death to get in one. I don't think I could do it as much as I would want to try. It would just scare me. But I remember him telling me the stories, like having to do a night flight, and you don't have any instruments really to tell where you're at, especially back then. You know, you didn't have phones with so much GPS on them, and you know, that would be a little tough right there.
Yeah, that definitely does sound like a tough, you know, situation to be in.
I'd still like to try. I would be scared to death the whole time.
I would definitely do the hang glider system. That would definitely be a nice thing to do on soaring that high up. And yeah, but doing anything else like that would, you know, definitely, you're right, be scary.
Somebody flying around Spartanburg a couple months ago, I guess basically strap a fan and motor to your back, and you use a parachute, and you guide yourself around. I don't think I could do that, but it seems pretty cool.
Called paragliding.
Folds up. You're I think you're pretty much done for.
Yeah, that chute definitely folds up. With all that weight of that fan, you're definitely coming down.
I'm trying to get home today because they're driving like crazy on 85. People just not paying attention, or I don't know, just it seems pretty bad today.
Yeah, definitely. I saw where it picked up. It was definitely backed up a little ways past Highway 14 right now, so I'm getting off on the side road like I normally do. So that way, at least I made it to the one exit before Highway 14, so I can take the back roads that pretty much leads me to the same place without having to go all the way up to Highway 14.
Our BMW is about to get off here in a minute. It's going to get really bad.
Yeah, and one thing I truly don't understand, regardless of who it is, there was a truck that was running on 85, just doing the little zipper thing, doing at least 90 miles an hour, zipping in and out of traffic, just beyond stupid.
I don't know. I tend to take my time going anywhere and try not to get in a hurry. I mean, I had to learn some of that the hard way, a few speed tickets when I was younger, but you know, nowadays, if I'm late, I'm late, and I'll get there when I get there. But, you know, I'm not going to be in a hurry to do it. And, you know, I put her in the right lane, and that's where I stay most of the time, and I just take my time going wherever I'm going.
That's exactly the way I do. It drives my wife crazy because I do get in the right lane unless I'm passing. Most of the time on the interstate, I'm doing 65 and not in a big hurry to, you know, to be stupid.
I realize that they passed a law last year that says you can't ride in the left lane. And when I found that out, man, I had to break my wife's heart because she likes to drive in the left lane all the time. And finally tell her, I'm like, you can't get a ticket if you stay in this left lane and you're not passing people. Because I stay in the right lane all the time, but she does. She drives that left lane. And I told her this last time we were going to the beach, I'm like, well, you know, you do what you want to do, it's your license, but, and you pay the fine, but, you know, you're not supposed to ride that left lane anymore. And she just kind of pouted and got over.
Yeah, that's it. I finally broke my wife at that, and now that I wish I could put a governor on my wife's car that would keep her to going so fast. It just, I don't understand the need to go, you know, 75, 80, and, you know, about 75 to 80 miles an hour all the time.
No, either. Like I said, my wife's the exact same way. It gets to the point where my boys, they don't want her to drive certain places, because if she gets, man, if she gets in traffic or something like that, I'm like, just pull over, let me drive. I mean, it won't bother me none, but man, it just tears her slap out of frame. And my two sons, they'll want her to just give it up, but they, you know, they do like the fact that she gets them places quicker sometimes, like we're headed to the beach, but then when we hit traffic and stuff, they hate it.
Yeah, like I said, I'll just sometimes just look at my wife when she's driving. I'll poke my head around her, look at the speedometer, and going, I know I'm speeding.
Anything, she just knows by the look.
Yep, that is definitely true. I was stationed in Georgia. I was on the way back to South Carolina to visit my parents, and I got pulled over, and the officer wrote me, I was in the right-hand lane doing 55. He wrote me a ticket for impeding traffic, and I took it to court and won, because I asked the officer, says, since when do I get a ticket for riding, getting a ticket for obeying the speed limit just because everyone else wants to speed?
see that in Georgia. I mean, they love speeding down there. You go to Atlanta, it's, holy crap. I mean, it's bad. I hate going to Atlanta for that reason alone. I mean, it don't matter what the speed limit is. They're going way over that. Which, you know, I hate saying up here, I think it's getting the same way. I mean, people just, they're in a hurry to get where they're going.
Good thing about going to Fort Stewart and Fort Benning, you don't have to go through Atlanta. You actually go down through the Greenville and, I mean, the Columbia area that way and go that route instead of having to go through Atlanta.
I'm always surprised when you get away from some of these bigger towns. Like, we went to the beach a couple weeks ago, and there was traffic around Newberry, so I decided to take a detour. So, you know, looking at the map, figured a different way around, so we went. I don't remember exactly how it is without looking at the map, but we basically got off before Newberry and cut around Columbia and come out on I-20. And you get back in those areas, and man, there's some pretty areas once you get away from Columbia. I would not want to live in Columbia, but man, some of those areas on the outskirts of Columbia, you know, like down towards the fire academy, it's amazing how nice it is once you get away from the main highways and stuff, even in those big cities. KO4CEF.
Yeah, that's why on the weekends, I pretty much, me and my wife will just get in the car and just ride around different places and right, to see stuff that you haven't seen before when you get away from the mainstream.
Yeah, one thing I do kind of like about, you know, your GPS sometimes is, you know, instead of staying on the main roads, you can't get off of them, and, you know, it'll route you some interesting places. It might not always be the way you want to go, but it'll definitely route you some interesting places from time to time if you do it, but I've done that a couple times where you get off the main road, just start someplace, and, you know, like you go up north of North Carolina or something like that, and you run into bushes, beans out in the middle of nowhere. You're just like, what in the world?
Yep, you definitely know you're in trouble when the GPS goes, I'm lost.
Yeah, you would be right about that.
Your GPS starts screaming, help me, I'm lost. You're definitely in big trouble.
Map in the car, but you get on some of these back roads or dirt roads or whatnot, you know, they won't always show up on there, so it's a little funky. I know we were going to, I was pulling a camper to Devil's Fort Campground, I'm down towards Lake Jocanti, and man, that thing sent me down a road. It was just a dirt road, a little bit of gravel on it, pulling the camper, and I'm just like, oh my God, what has this thing done to me? And I can't just turn around and go backwards. So I had to just keep going till we come out on a road, and we got lucky, and it just happened to come out on the road we needed to be on.
That is definitely a good thing. Obviously, the road had been updated on the GIS system, just had not to the come point of time to be paved yet.
The first time we went camping in the camper, that happened to us.
Yeah, in the Army, that's when you say that you put out an LBS sign.
How was it? I didn't catch it.
Sierra LBS.
Don't know what that acronym means. I'm going to have to look it up, I'm sure.
Boss bigger than poop, and you know you can supplement the way you need it to.
Is that coming in use at some point, Seth?
Yeah, when I was in Germany, my unit, we did trace on the East German border. We always have new people that come in, and every 90 days our unit did trace on the border. So we knew these routes and roads back and forth, and so some person would come in new and try to navigate, and they would tell us to, you know, make a turn here, make a turn there, as we were still keeping it on our side of the border. But when we were lost like that, we'd open the door and pretend like we'd stick an LBS sign out.
Oh, God, I bet that'd be pretty funny.
You definitely had to, because sometimes you would be running trace for like 4 or 5 hours, so you definitely had to keep it fun. And more so all the roads over there look the same.
This ain't been around forever, so, I mean, depending on whether you get your bearings and use a map, you know, you get out in some areas, it can be pretty bad.
That is definitely true. It's KO4PXB for ID. One thing that was very interesting, that, and they're still in place today, in Germany, in East Germany, West Germany, there's actually stones that have KP and KH on it. One, and that's how they used to mark the border. One would say King of Prussia, and the lines that were etched on the stone told which way was the area for the King of Prussia, and the other sides on the other side of the markings was for the King of Hessen. So that way, people, when they saw these stones, they knew which side of the border to stay on.
Listen, I wish I'd have known something like that whenever I was over in Germany, but I never got to see anything. I did get to see a few things while I was over there for work, but I never saw anything like that. And I didn't go to Berlin. I was down in Munich, so. But, well, Lloyd, I am pulling in the driveway, so I'm going to have to say 7-3. It has been a pleasure talking to you, and I appreciate you keeping me company on the way home. And I hope you have a safe rest of your trip home. And I hope we talk to you again on the radio, KO4CF, and I'll be clearing your final.
Sir, please have a great day. KO4PXB, mobile for another 10, 15 minutes or so.
4CBA mobile. UA4HNT. UA4HNT, KB4CBA. Name here is David, and good afternoon.
Hi, David. My name is Alton, Alpha Lima Tango Oscar November. I'm over in Pendleton, and I'm stationary at the QTH. And, you know, not planning to get moving around too much. I was listening to one of you guys say a moment ago that he'd be mobile another 10 or 15 minutes. I started thinking about when I had to make those long drives home. Thank goodness I'm out of that business.
Me too. I'm going to play tennis. I've been retired for 7-8 years, something. I haven't lost count. I've been retired so long, I haven't lost count.
How do you have time to play tennis? I've never been so busy in all my life. Now, I have to deal with my parents' estates and stuff, but Lord in heaven, I am so busy now. And I really thought I worked hard, but now I think I am working hard.
Alton, you're right about that. Yeah, I went through all that, but my, my dad passed away, 2.5 years ago, and, but I was his, health care and durable power of attorney, and so I took care of everything for him, and he was a banker, so he had three different programs that he kept balanced, and it drove me insane, and it would just drive him crazy if he couldn't get them to balance and all agree with one another. And I'd say, well, why do you have this one? And he'd say, oh, well, you know, I got this one for so-and-so. And I'd say, okay, well, why do you have this one? And he said, well, you know, I use that for my taxes. And I said, well, okay, well, why do you have this one? And he said, well, I just use that because it's just for fun or something. And I'm just like pulling my hair out, but yeah, it's gotta work, you know, it's gotta balance, and everything's gotta, all the I's have gotta be dotted, the T's crossed, and all that.
Scaring me right now. My mother passed away like 7 years ago, and I'm still up to my neck in her estate. There's primarily, I had a problem with CPAs. They just didn't do anything. I honestly thought that they looked at me as being a very small one-time type account where my mother's attorney sent me, and I just felt like they were moving so slowly, not getting anything done. And the attorney told me last time I met with him 4 months ago, just fire him. Well, I thought he would do it, but then I realized they were his CPAs. He didn't want to have his hands on it. So, yeah, there's so many hassles here. And I'm trying to assign ownership of property right now. Nobody's going to like me for that. You can't be popular and be in that business.
Not. I never will forget, right before my dad passed away, he was up at the Woodlands place. So, see, it wasn't assisted living. He was already in skilled care. And he had been up there about, I don't know, 2 years or more. And I remember coming home one day and telling my wife that, you know, this is beginning to wear on me just a little bit. You know, it wasn't just a few weeks later he passed away. And he had a great day that day. He was real active and you know, getting around and doing his thing. And he just took a shower that evening. And, of course, he had assistance with the shower and everything. He said, I'm going to sit down on the edge of the bed here and catch my breath. And he sat down, and then he laid down on the bed, and he just quit breathing. That was it.
Peaceful and comfortable. My mother always told me one thing all my life. She said the old people would get that upper respiratory thing and that it would, you know, end up taking them. And she wasn't much wrong, right? Wrong about that. She really wasn't much wrong about that. After she got injured in this dad blame house, I, after rehab and all, I took her to Clemson Downs, put her in there. And and she got to really doing well. She was in the assisted living, like as in. So she got to where she enjoyed it, meeting new people and going to the dining room. But then the place had this literally upper respiratory thing kind of sweep through it, and she caught it there. So stuff goes bad in a handshake. I can't believe it.
You just never know when your day is coming, and you know, I'm glad of that because I don't want to know. And I've never, I've had some my grandparents, a couple of my grandparents died, and we knew that they were getting ready to pass away, but other than that, everybody else has been more of a, you know, a surprise than anything, and to me, that's, I don't know. This is just as easy because I kind of go ahead and make my peace with it before they pass on. My dad was 91, so yeah, he lived a long life.
Just like 94, lived forever, was great at everything she ever did. Super perfect lady. And so they called me that morning. They told me, they said certain words. They said, Alton, you know that your mother's not going to survive today. And I asked them, well, what do you want me to do? I just got home. I left there like 1 a.m. And this is at 10. And they said, you know, she's not going to survive today. And if she should, she will certainly not survive tomorrow. They called me back in 10 minutes. They said, just sit still, wait on us, we'll call you back. They called me back in 10 minutes and told me she had passed. And that was in 2015.
Well, they were right on the money there. I mean, so, yeah, sometimes you can predict it, and sometimes it just sneaks up on you. But anyway, the way life is, it comes at you. Full blast, you know, ready or not, here I come, kind of thing, and so that's just the way it is. I found that out early in life. You know, my mom passed away when I was 4, so you know, life kind of slapped me in the face there. At an early age, it wasn't a lot of fun growing up without my mom. I really miss her, but heck, that was 63 years ago.
Same age, and the idea of what you just said about your mom's passing, I don't even have a way to say anything about that other than knowing what it was like to have one up until she was 94 and you held her little hand and all that stuff. No, I can't imagine. If my daddy had tried to raise me alone, I don't know what would have gone on.
KO4PXB.
Anybody talk on this repeater, I tell you. Oh, well, go ahead, KO4PXB, KB4CBA.
Y'all talking about mothers and my situation growing up in foster care. When I got to visit my mother, it was a very strange situation because I didn't know what to say to her, didn't know what to do, how to talk to her, and normally it would be like a 10-15 minute conversation and then didn't know what else to say.
Yeah, I hear you, and I cannot fathom what you're speaking of. I mean, I'd never lived it. No, my mother was a good friend of mine, and she was also very smart. You wouldn't have known it just to talk to her. She wove velvet for like a blue million years on 10 looms, and we never missed a lick. I mean, she and Daddy put together a very successful child-rearing household. They raised three children. They ended up, burying two of them. And it gets funnier from there. It really does. So then they end up passing away and leaves me with all this stuff to pick up. I'm at my mother and daddy's house right now trying to clear it out. They lived here 73 years. Whoa. And never threw away a thing.
In saying that, due to the fact that when my aunt died, she grew up during the Depression, please make sure you go through every single book that they have, because when we were doing that in her place, we found over $13,000 that she had put in books, because she never threw away anything, and that's where she kept all her money. I mean, literally, we found big, bonded together things of rubber bands, plastic bags, paper clips, everything, because she didn't throw things away.
Rexall bottles, use the pills and stick money in them. That was a big one with me. I had so much fun. She trusted me implicitly, but I wouldn't touch things because they were private. They were hers. They didn't belong to me. And so after she was gone, I went in and looked certain places, and I was astounded at what I tripped over, literally. And, the woman was very smart. She'd take two pennies, you'd see them both in her hand. When you look down again, there would be three. It just boggles my mind how she did it.
There's definitely a true saying that your parents become smart once you turn 18 or get out on your own. Prior to that, they're dumb and they don't know anything.
Other station on the side. We don't mean to ignore anyone.
I'm in a lot of traffic here on Hayward Road. I'm getting ready to turn on the Antrim Drive, and I'm just copying the mail. But yeah, I know. After my dad passed away, about cleaning out the house and everything. Boy, I tell you, he kept everything, and it's just go ahead and run that red light. Yeah. But anyway, it was just a mess, and we threw away so much stuff. But we did go through every little thing because you never knew. I remember my grandmother that I grew up with. She he would take $20 bills and stuff them down in this seat cushion of this chair in one of the bedrooms. And if she needed some money, some cash, she would go in there and you know, get a 20 or two, however many she needed. And that's where she kept her money. So there you go.
All over. Excuse me, I'm about to cough. excuse me. And she kept hers, and it was just really interesting. I will never get this job done. On Thanksgiving Day, I will turn 70. I will never finish this work.
Need some help. It's just one room at a time.
It's one room at a time. But I don't feel that I have enough room because everything's in boxes. I came in, I locked the house up for a long time, and I got a little bit of mold in it, so I brought a mold abatement company in, and I didn't realize it, but they were going to box everything up, clean it, box it up, put it into a storage unit. And they did all these things, and, you know, then they took care of the house itself. It was just one of those things where it wasn't I don't think I would have ever noticed it if some other people did and told me it was there. And, oh, darn. I mean, guys look over so much.
Yep, that is definitely true, where I guess when they see something, if they don't really want to do it as a project right now, they're going to, it'll keep.
Words out of my mouth. It'll keep. And my wife, for the most part, puts up with it.
It's key. If she starts doing it herself, then you're Johnny on the spot to start doing it and fix it.
I learned as far as that goes. I'll give you that one. She and I just enjoyed, what was that anniversary? It was a big one this last time. And so I tried to do everything right. I don't think anything went so well. I believe we wound up at Cracker Barrel with bad service.
Yeah, I give my wife a lot of credit. She only really had to do things by herself on one of my deployments, but she definitely had things squared away. Well, prior to that, she had all the contractors for any appliances or anything that would break in the house, that she had their contact numbers and the agreement that they would work on it if she, you know, called them.
The Swift Branch.
The Army.
You don't have to apologize. Just swear. I worked in the 70s, early 70s for the Corps up in D.C., and they turned me loose like after 20 months, 18, 20 months, and let me go home.
So about that before your service.
I was a civilian, man. Back then, I was a 61 draft lottery. It was going to 180 that year. So in the first half of the numbers, I mean, they're used up, 180. And I was 61, so I knew somebody was going to call on me. But I had a first phone. I had a second telegraphy. I was radar endorsed. I think I had a ham ticket by then. But the second telegraphy was the kicker. And so I was taken out of the line and offered an opportunity to do my service as a civilian in America.
That is definitely good. Like I said, my military service, I definitely got to travel in a lot of places and see some interesting things.
It was a different time back then, completely different time. And odd, it was so odd that I'd be 18 and hold those licenses. And so, you know, even the service liked to recognize that type certification. And so they needed people. And I worked in D.C. for 18 months or better. you know, it was like up toward 20 months that I stayed. They could have kept me 2 years under the original agreement. It wasn't an agreement, it was the draft court, and it was a civilian position, and at 8th and I, which is in Georgetown, and I had a really good time. I enjoyed what I did. I do not remember so many things about what I should have noticed, but some things stand out, I mean, big in my mind. WA4HNT Friday.
Y'all have a good evening, and take care. KB4CBA, clear.
You have a good day, sir. We didn't mean to, you know, break up any CUSAs here. WA4HNT, I'm Alton. See you later.
CLX Mobile.